TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Paul Cienfuegos, Community Rights versus Corporate Rights. The Emergence of the Community Rights Movement. The 2010 Supreme Court decision giving corporations the power to spend unlimited amounts of money on elections, and the countervailing movement to amend the Constitution to take away the corporate right of personhood, have put a spotlight on the underreported power grab by corporations. As this program goes to air in the summer of 2013, a grassroots movement to defend local communities from corporations is celebrating 16 years of successes. The new community rights movement created binding ordinances that prevent hydraulic fracking, industrial hog farms, water withdrawals by giant bottling plants, corporate mining, and so on, with many more projects underway. The nonprofit law firm that is supporting the movement is CELDEF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Paul Cienfuegos works closely with CELDEF's attorneys, and he is teaching workshops to inspire communities to set and defend their own local ordinances. I recorded Cienfuegos in July 2013 in Willits, California. He begins with the first success of the community rights movement in rural Pennsylvania 16 years ago. Here's Paul Cienfuegos.
The setting is Wells Township, Pennsylvania. Population approximately 500 people. Wells Township is a rural Republican farming community that's mostly family hog farms. And one day about 16 years ago, the farm community discovers that they're going to be the recipients of a 15,000 head factory farm with hogs coming from a deep south giant hog factory corporation. And they go to their county government and they say, well, we don't want a factory farm of 15,000 hogs. And the county says, oh, okay, so you need to talk to the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. Do you know what's coming? Yeah. Well, they went to the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. They went to the hearings. They filed their statements. But interestingly enough, the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture says, we're delighted to hear that you're interested in this project. We're developing a manure management act for the state of Pennsylvania that regulates the way that manure is dealt with in factory farms, and we'd love your input. And the farmers of Wells Township weren't really interested in a manure management act. They wanted no factory farm in their township. Well, it turns out that there was no way to say no under state or county law. And there you go, right? There's the story again in real life. So they had been working with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund for a couple of years, and they kept finding limitations in the corporation's regulatory permit, right? And that's what tends to happen is all of our groups are used to suing State Department of Forestry or Ag Department or this or that, or suing the corporation because they violated blah, blah, blah. And when there's a permit on the table, and I know this directly from my experience on the EPIC board, a timber harvest plan is put forward by a logging company, and the regulatory attorneys from EPIC go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and if they find anything that's deficient, they go to the judge and say, this is deficient. And then we call it a win when the judge says, you're absolutely right, thanks for catching this, refused. And until the company comes back having solved the problem that the EPIC lawyers were paid by the public to solve, right? And so that's what CELDEF became good at. It became good at winning regulatory delays. But it actually wasn't winning anything because the entire system of regulatory law is about permitting, which means allowing the activity to move forward. That's what a permit does, is it legalizes a certain defined amount of harm. Right? Manure Management Act, Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture. How much manure? Spread how thickly? With how thick a lining to stop it of the dam breaking and ending up in the nearest creek and then killing the river, et cetera, right? If it's not about manure management, the agency's not really interested in your input. That's the system. And the farmers said, after 2 or 3 years of this, they said, why can't we pass a law in Wells Township that says no corporate agriculture in our town? And the Seldiff attorneys explained to them very patiently at that point that they can't because it's illegal. It's illegal because it violates the Constitution, i.e., it violates corporate constitutional rights. It's illegal because state law says very clearly under state preemption laws that if the state considers something a normal agricultural activity, and factory farms are legally a normal agricultural activity, like clear cutting is legally defined as a normal forestry activity, then a local community can't ban it because it's already defined as normal at the state level, state preemption. And Dillon's rule, right? The local township supervisors don't have the authority. They haven't been given the authority by state government to say you can ban legal corporate activities. Well, they said, we don't care about that. You know, we're patriotic Americans, and we have the authority according to the state constitution, and that's what we want to do. Here's the opening paragraph of this state's constitution. I'm going to read you three of them, three states. Here's California's. Section 1 of the California Constitution. All political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for their protection, security, and benefit. And they have the right to alter or reform it when the public good may require. That's the first paragraph of our state constitution here. Now again, all that is this relationship. It's just about consent to the governed. Right? It's legitimate as long as the public is consenting. But when the public isn't consenting and nothing happens, it's not legitimate. Here's Oregon's state constitution. Again, right at the beginning, Article 1, Bill of Rights, Section 1, natural rights inherent in people. We declare that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness. And they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. Here's the first paragraph of Washington State's Constitution. All political power is inherent in the people, and governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed and are established to protect and maintain individual rights. We're asleep is mainly what's happening at this point. I mean, a century ago, it didn't matter whether we were awake or asleep. We didn't have any personhood. But most of us do now. Our state constitutions are constantly being amended, usually in the wrong direction. And more corporate rights are built into our state constitutions. So there's lots of contradictory stuff there. And so it's about who are we? And are we going to act as the majority, understanding what our proper authority and our proper relationship is with our government and corporate institutions? So the people in Wells Township said to the Seldiff attorneys, well, we don't really care if it violates corporate constitutional rights, state preemption, or Dillon's rule. The Pennsylvania state constitution says we have the authority to have some basic consent in place. And we're almost unanimously opposed to this in our town of 520 people. So Seldiff passes the first ordinance of this kind that they've ever done 13 years ago, and it's called the Anti-Corporate Farming Ordinance. And it simply bans non-family-owned agricultural corporations. And it legally defines family-owned corporations. So this starts spreading across Pennsylvania. And within a handful of years, 20 rural Republican farm communities have passed the Anti-Corporate Farming Ordinance in their communities. And within another few years, in 80 Pennsylvania rural communities, Seldiff has helped those communities to pass bans on corporate dumping of urban sewage sludge onto local farmland. Yes. Banned. Then two towns in Maine that are trying to stop Nestle bottling plants, they're actually, it was Poland Springs brand, which is a Nestle corporation, opening bottling plants in these two communities in Maine, and they were paying attention to Pennsylvania, and they passed bans on corporate extraction of water for bottling. And in both towns, the company stopped their plans and never arrived. Interestingly, in one of these two towns, they'd already partially built the industrial building and they had put in all the wells. And they left what must have been $1 million or more as investment in the ground. And they left. All of the ordinances I'm going to talk about that have passed are on CELDEF's website. Dozens of ordinances that have been passed in 150 communities. So at some point in that first 6 or 8 years, starting 13 years ago, community majorities started, and these were all passed by their elected supervisors, not by the public. Because in most Northeast communities, they don't have the ballot initiative. Some of them have the annual town meeting, but they weren't using that yet either, although some of them are now using that. So Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 3 or 4 years ago, was the beginning of kind of an expansion of this vision that it wasn't just a ban on corporate activities the town didn't want. The first expansion was to strip corporations of their constitutional rights and to strip the state of its preemption and Dillon's rule authority within the language of the ordinance itself. We don't recognize any of these as legal here because they directly violate our authority and rights of self-governance here. Okay? Right? That the health and welfare protection of our community is what we're here to do. Right? It's not, we're not going to beg the state to protect us. We are the sovereign people in this local place. We'll pass the laws directly, and we'll push back on any state or corporate rights that violate our self-governing authority. And to be explicit, they're not saying we don't trust the state or federal government to pass laws. What they're actually saying in the language, it's very interesting, is that state and federal government should not have the authority to tell us that we can't pass stronger environmental laws, stronger labor laws, that we believe that the proper role of larger scales of government in the United States is to set the floor for rights and protections, yes, not the ceiling, that the state has the authority absolutely to pass the floor on minimal environmental rules, minimal labor rights. And don't you dare tell us that we can't pass stronger environmental and labor laws. That, again, that violates our authority, right? So it's not just an anti-state law movement, right? It's about the right of a people to protect themselves at a higher level than the baseline that we want state and federal government to be doing, right? That's what we consider appropriate state and federal law. So it shifts to this language that incorporates state preemption, Dillon's rule, corporate rights, into the language of the ordinance. And then they take another big leap, significant, profound leap, I think, is they're like, oh, so here we have been going for 6 or 8 years on figuring out what we don't want. But a sovereign people need to be a little bit more bold than that. What do we want? Yes. What do we want? What do we want the future of our community, our county, to look like? What kinds of baselines do we want in terms of sustainability law, for example, or justice law, right? What's the baseline that a majority of elected officials or of the public can be convinced to pass as the baseline, the minimum standards, which starts to get us back to the list of requirements and prohibitions of early chartered corporations, right? So for example, you know, just to take sweatshops, for example, right? We have this corporate social responsibility movement, which to me is diversionary. Because what it does is, one corporation at a time, we're pleading or demanding or begging or whatever we're doing for that corporation to pass its board to pass what is ultimately a voluntary code of conduct. That they will agree to not use sweatshops that XYZ. Rather than the public saying, the bottom line for labor practices of anything sold here is the following. That's what a sovereign community would do. We wouldn't say, if you don't like the product on the shelf in the store because it's toxic, don't buy it. That's kind of the conventional situation that we've been stuck in. Two, why are there toxic products being sold in our stores? Right? That's a paradigm shift leap. Right? That's a big leap of consciousness. That's us decolonizing our minds about what we need. What we're stuck in right now is a corporate social responsibility movement, where we're trying to get corporations to do something, to write their own codes of conduct, or we'll write them, and would you please sign on to this non-enforceable policy. And so what we're stuck with in the store is choosing between toxic and non-toxic. What we're stuck with in the store is choosing between organic and poisoned. And so what we do is we enshrine a two-tier food supply. We don't quite realize that that's what we're doing. But we basically say to ourselves semi-consciously, I'm paying enough attention to food safety that I'm going to buy organic because hopefully it's non-GMO, we hope. But 90% of us who aren't buying organic for one reason or another, they're relegated to buying toxic food, right? That's not what we the people would be thinking. We the people would be thinking in an uncolonized mind, we don't want toxic food sold to us. We set the bottom line. So it's not voting with our dollars, it's what does the majority want? So that's where we end up. And so the ordinances about 4 or 5 years ago to bring us to the present become, for example, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 3 years ago, the only major city to pass one of these so far, by a 7-0 unanimous city council vote 3 years ago, Pittsburgh passes a right to water ordinance that says that we, the people of Pittsburgh, and the non-person nature of Pittsburgh, that all living beings in Pittsburgh, have the right to water. And if every living being in Pittsburgh has the right to water, we have to ban fracking because we have 200 fracking leases about to be signed in the city of Pittsburgh, if you can imagine. So by a 7-0 vote 3 years ago, they passed a right to water ordinance that bans all corporate fracking. Okay? In New Hampshire, a year and a half ago, 4 communities from a few hundred people to a few thousand people in scope, in size, passed through their annual town meeting, this is physical hands in the air once a year, where they're making direct law, right? They're not going into a secret ballot box. Everybody gets to see what everyone's doing. So New Hampshire just passed, in the last year and a half, 4 of 6 towns that had it on their annual meeting agenda. They defined for the first time in their own community, they came up with a legal definition for unsustainable energy. And they banned anything that met that definition in their town. So just to bring you to the full present, what's going on our coast is very, very exciting. Spokane, Washington, this November, for the third time, will be attempting to pass a community bill of rights that will enshrine the right of neighborhoods by majority vote to say no to major industrial, commercial, residential developments they don't want in their neighborhood. Will recognize that the Spokane River and Spokane Aquifer have recognized rights of nature, rights to thrive and evolve. Will give working people, when they cross the threshold into their workplace every morning, the right of all of the Bill of Rights protections while at work. I don't know if you know this, but you have no Bill of Rights protections while at work. You know why? Because if you read the Bill of Rights, it just says the government shall not interfere in your X, Y, and Z rights. That's what it actually says. It'll take the Bill of Rights and enshrine them into enforceable local labor law in the city of Spokane. And the fourth piece of the Community Bill of Rights, which will be on the ballot in November, which, by the way, lost by less than 1,000 votes in Spokane 2 years ago, and they're back on the ballot now, this November. EnvisionSpokane.org is the link to their campaign, ENVision. The fourth one says any corporate rights that interfere in implementing these 3 new local rights shall be nullified. So that's the point that corporate rights drop out, is when the corporation challenges our authority. Not until then does the right get challenged. Okay? That's how it's worded.
So they're challenging us as opposed to us.
Exactly. They have to challenge our authority of self-governance as enshrined in various legal documents in U.S. history. So Lane County, which is Eugene, et cetera, Benton County, which is Corvallis, et cetera, recently filed one, is about to file a sustainable food systems ordinance that defines unsustainable food systems and bans things that meet that definition. And specifically, they're banning GMO agriculture entirely in the county. Portland's group that I co-created a year and a half ago, Community Rights PDX. If you just put Community Rights PDX into Google, you'll see our brand new website. We're going to copy Lane and Benton County's sustainable food ordinance, and we're going to add one of CELDEF's ordinances about campaign finance that strips corporations of their authority to influence county elections in Multnomah County, which is Portland's county, so that it will be illegal for corporations to influence elections with their money or services or advertising, and will make lobbying illegal, and will make private meetings between corporate people and government illegal.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. So I'm scratching the surface of what the community rights movement is about. So here's the deal. First of all, CELDEF's attorneys have written these extraordinary legal language ordinances that, by the way, are readable by anybody with a 10th grade education. This is not a legalese document because this is people's law. This is for and by us. It's what we want. Why would we let our attorneys write a law that doesn't make sense to us? That we need somebody to interpret who we have to pay, right? What's the point of that if you're writing people's law? So what happens is that the ordinances have been drafted in a very clever way. They've been drafted to force the corporation or the state to challenge us in the way we want them to challenge us about rights. These are not ordinances about energy, waste, ag, logs. They're not. They're about rights. They're about who's in charge here in this place. The majority or a corporation that's not even a real person? Who's in charge here? And what's interesting is this is not lefty green analysis or framing, right? Almost every story I've told you is conservative farm communities, right? This is not a left-wing thing. In fact, the left is kind of AWOL so far in our movement. We're waiting for the left to start catching up. It's very interesting. So the ordinances are drafted so that the corporate lawyers have to come into a county courthouse. That's where they have to begin the lawsuit. And again, this is after the public by majority or the electeds by majority have passed the law. They have to come into a county courthouse, and the corporate lawyers have to argue that corporate constitutional rights trump the rights of the people of the town or of the county. And that's not actually what people want to hear from a corporate lawyer. Right? And so in a regulatory lawsuit, it's their experts versus our experts, and the language is obscure, and the public doesn't get involved because it doesn't really make sense. In this stuff, the public was involved from the start, right? Because you did the culture shift work necessary so that people understand the proper relationship between we the people and our institutions, our subordinate institutions. So when we're told we don't have the authority to do this, and we've all learned the state constitutional opening paragraphs or the preamble to the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence, it awakens us to a different kind of power. We're operating as we the people instead of as single issue activists, which we've been doing for a century, right? We wake up, right? And we wake up around across the ideological spectrum, because it's about local people defining our own future. It's very exciting, right? It's really exciting. So the corporations lawyers have to argue that if the state attorney general sues, as they have in Pennsylvania a number of times, the state attorney general has to argue that the public has no self-governing authority. Well, again, that's clearly not true. Every state constitution opens with very significant language that says no consent of the governed equals no legitimate government decision making. Right? So there have been 150 towns in 9 states. Pennsylvania is the first 100 that I mentioned, and they're all preceding the land, almost all of them are before they even added the prohibitory language about corporate rights, state preemption, etc. They were the first manifestation of this work. The last 50 are the stuff where we've started to develop, where the CELDEF attorneys have created a more and more elegant kind of structure to hold this that forces the corporate or government attorney to challenge, it's kind of like an onion. To get to the ban on corporate ag or the ban on whatever, the corporate attorneys have to strip the onion of layer after layer. They have to challenge our authority of self-governance. They have to challenge the right of communities to trumping corporate rights. They have to challenge rights of nature, which are built into most of these ordinances now. They have to challenge Dillon's rule, right? And then finally they get to the ban. And it's the whole thing is drafted in this way to force into public space what is actually true, that their rights trump our rights in conventional law. So what do we have to do? We have to step outside the box, and we have to pass a kind of law that hasn't happened before in this country for a very long time, but the abolitionists and the suffragists got it, right? They stepped outside the box because abolitionists and suffragists couldn't use existing law to build justice for women or for freed slaves. They couldn't. So they had to do civil disobedience en masse in both movements for year after year. We call our work collective acts of municipal civil disobedience. These are direct, frontal challenges to illegitimate law, right? And contrary to what you might assume, because they're a direct challenge to illegitimate law, it's much more difficult for the powers to be to challenge them. If we simply passed it within the regulatory system, they would just say, oh, I'm sorry, that violates state preemption, and it's over. You lose. It's over. You could appeal to the higher body, but it's like, you know what the point of that is. So this is a whole new system of law that we're creating.
That was Paul Cienfuegos, recorded on July 1st, 2013, in Willits, California. Cienfuegos is a workshop leader, lecturer, and writer. He works closely with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. The links to Paul Cienfuegos and CELDEF's websites are on tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. You can get information on how to order a CD at cost on tucradio.org or by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. TUC Radio's mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California, 95418. That's Calpella, California, 95418. For more information, call 707-463-2654 or go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, for the address and donate buttons. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.